continue where we left off. So, looking at these various themes, and then the next theme here is the theme of death. And of all of these themes, yes, whether it's sickness or old age, death is by far the most important one. You read the sutras, you read them. The number of places where the Buddha talks about the idea of contemplation, the mindfulness of the perception of death is in a large number of places. And it is always praised very highly by the Buddha as an important aspect of living the spiritual life. And in one sutra, the Buddha goes so far as to say that if you are a monastic, and you have ordained, and if you contemplate death regularly, and you do it in the right way, you cannot actually disrobe. Disrobe becomes impossible. Why is that? Well, it's basically because if you know that you're going to die, and you know that it can happen at any time, what are you going to disrobe for? You can disrobe to die, and that's kind of the idea. You know, there is no kind of a purpose of disrobing anymore, because the ever-presence of death is always there to remind you of what matters in life. So you stay, and you stay in those. You stay in Rome. So death contemplation is a very powerful effect in that way. So let's just read it out. For the sake of what benefit should a woman or a man, a householder or one going forward, often reflect thus, I am subject to death, I am not exempt from death. During their lives, beings are intoxicated with life. And when they are intoxicated with life, they engage in misconduct by body, speech, and mind. And when one often reflects upon this theme, the intoxication with life is either completely abandoned or diminished. It is for the sake of this benefit that a woman or man, a householder or one going forward, should often reflect thus, I am subject to death, I am not exempt from death. And the idea here is to make the idea of death present in your life. So, and because the problem with life is that we never know when it's going to end. We know it is going to end. We know we're going to have to die. And that's just the reality of things. But we don't know when it's going to happen. And very often, almost always, it happens when we don't expect it. Yeah? Very few people are actually ready to die. Yeah? You know, you ask someone who's very old and they're kind of lying, they're sick and about to die, and you ask them, are you ready now? Oh no, probably just a temporary illness. I'm get over this and I kind of, come back out again and I'll continue living for a couple of more years. Even when you're very old, people are often not ready. They don't see it coming, and it happens when we least expect it. And, you look at the world, there are so many people who die when they are young. People get cancer in their face when they are young, and they get a heart attack. Even young people only get heart attacks. There's all these things happening all the time. And when you read about it in the newspaper, what is your reaction to that? And most people's reaction is, when you read about a young person like this, oh yeah, this young person has died. That's not really me or someone else. Yeah, you don't really take it on board. That could actually be you. We just don't know. There's always a feeling that this is foreign to us. It's somebody else. It's happening somewhere else. And it's hard to actually take it on board. This could be us. You don't know what's happening inside of your body right now. You don't know the possibilities of illness and things. You don't know. You go out into the traffic, some crazy driver comes and whacks you down. You walk down the stairs, you stumble, you roll down the stairs, and that's it. You walk into a bush in Australia, and a snake comes out and bites you. I shouldn't say that, because you will never come to Australia. It's very, very rare. It almost never happens. Really. Only a few people every now and again, every year, die of snake bite. Incredibly rare. But sometimes it happens, yeah? I'm sure it can happen here in Malaysia as well. People buy a snake bite, yeah? But it happens here as well, right? So it happens everywhere. Yeah? So this is a problem. We just don't know. It is unreliable. So one of the ideas of the contemplation of death is to make it real. It can happen now. Yeah, it can happen in tomorrow, next week. It can happen almost any time. And when we get this reality thing about death can happen at any time, then Regardless of how young you are, right, Jerry? Is that right then? Yeah. You see, at least you got that point right, yeah? That's good. That's great. Good. So the reality, when that happens, it kind of brings you back to the present moment. Why? Because all of the things in our life, all the things that we often desire, the things that we're looking for, the goals that we have, the anger that we have against other people, becomes irrelevant if you're going to die. Yeah, you're not going to think about all these things in life, all these pursuits that we have, all the cravings, and we're going somewhere. All of that becomes irrelevant. Yeah. It doesn't matter anymore. No. You're not going to carry around your anger with somebody else if you're about to die. Because you're out of here, you don't have anything more to do with this person. So all that goes by the wayside. This is the beauty about the contemplation of death. If it is practiced properly, it leads to a very peaceful existence, very peaceful life. And this is what this really is about. I don't know if you have noticed that some people, when they have lived very good lives, when they come to the deathbed, they're very peaceful when they die. Have you seen that happening? Yeah? You know, they are really at peace, and you can see that they are kind of, they have realized that now they're dying, they are out of here, they've got nothing more to do with this world. Imagine yourself being on the deathbed, yeah? This world is finished. You're not really interested in this world anymore. So, you know, when people come and talk to you, you kind of, yeah, how are you, goodbye, and then you kind of on your journey into the future, because this world is finished. It makes you very peaceful. There's no craving about the future, there's no ill will about the past anymore. It draws you into the present moment. When you meet people who have kind of experiences, like near-death experiences, one of the nuns that the Masara Mahas, she told me, she actually almost drowned once. Yeah, she almost drowned, and then just in the last minute, somebody kind of came and picked her up. This was while she was still a laywoman, before she became ordained. Somebody just grabbed her and pulled her out of the water, but she almost drowned. And she said at that point, she had never felt so mindful in her whole life as she did at that particular point. Why? Because suddenly you let go of everything. You know that there's nothing you can hold on to. You're about to die. So very powerful mindfulness arose. And this is what we are trying to do with the death contemplation. If you wait, there's no reason why we need to wait until we actually do die. And why not use that possibility, use that actuality in the present moment to make it real now? So we use that, and this is what the death contemplation is about. Bring that death into the present moment, and then you get this feeling of greater clarity, of greater mindfulness. Because at the point of death, there is no future. There's nowhere else to go. Try it out. And one of the things I want to do at some stage during either this retreat or the next one when we do meditation together is to do a little death contemplation. And during the meditation and see what happens, and see how you feel about that. If you don't want to be part of that, that's fine, you don't have to do it, that kind of scares you. But if you wish, you can, some people really enjoy that. Yes?
Yeah, in order not to scare young people from seeing Buddhism so hectic, can we tell them that once they pass away or upon death, it's game over?
Yeah.
Game over, they go to the next higher level of game. A higher level of
a
higher rank.
Yeah.
Can we say that?
Can we say that?
Game over. Yeah. Because they used to play game when we talk in terms of their language.
Game over, okay. It would be nice if it was game over, because sometimes it is game over. You have to continue on the other side, that's part of the problem sometimes. the idea of rebirth is it's a very important one in the Buddhist teachings. Of course, this is why. If it is game over, and actually it's not such a big deal, if it's just all finished and then nothing happens afterward, that's kind of fine. But the Buddhist idea, of course, is the idea of rebirth. This is what gives you a different outlook, in a different way of looking at the world. And this is where this idea of investing long-term comes from. Instead of just investing for this life, and then if you invest everything in this life, you die, what happens then? You have to let go of everything, Everything is gone, all your effort, all your hard work, it's for nothing, because now you're going to die, you have to leave everything behind. How does that make you feel? It makes you feel terrible. It makes you feel confused. It makes you feel you're on your deathbed. Oh, everything has to go. I spent my whole life for all this. Now it has to go. Help. Yeah, that's what it feels like. And especially if you have done some bad things on the way to kind of help you build up all the things in this life. This is what many people do. Yeah, to have success in this life, they also do immoral things. They cheat. They steal from others. Sometimes they kill people. Yeah, and lie, whatever. To have success in this life. Imagine what it would be like on your deathbed when all of that has to go, everything you have made, and on top of that, you have done lots of bad deeds to secure those things. Secure things that are permanent. Secure things that you have to let go of. Once you start to look at the world in this way, it becomes crazy. Yeah, it becomes, you understand how mad it is to try to get things in this life by cheating, by doing bad things. So this is kind of why this idea of rebirth is so significant, why it matters so much, because it changes your outlook. And you start to invest for the long term, invest for the broad picture, rather invest for this tiny little window that we have now, this little life that we have now. Yes, it takes a degree of pain, it takes a degree of confidence in the Buddha's teachings. And you gain that after a while, after you start studying this teaching and see what they're like and how well they describe human life, it is hard sometimes not to get some confidence in these teachings. And you accept these things as you go along. So the tendency is like game over and not game over, yeah? It is this life is game over, and then you kind of carry on the new game in the next life. And sometimes we have to make this, instead of just making life a game, we have to enjoy life, but we also have to be careful not just to play around and be intoxicated and just messing around, because then we get into a rude shock in the future. Yeah. So this is what then contemplation is about, is to make life more real, more powerful. And when we do that, it actually has a powerful effect on our life. And it's interesting, you know, I always like to tell the story of what it is like to go on a couple of occasions I've been with Ajahn Brahm to the hospital to visit dying people. Sometimes I go by myself, but a couple of occasions I also went with Ajahn Brahm. That was an eye-opener to me when I saw how Ajahn Brahm deals with the death experience. Most people go along and cry, no, please don't die, you know, it's too early, oh, we love you so much, please don't die, I'm dying. Can't change that, yeah, don't tell me please don't die, makes it worse. It's kind of, we go to hospital and we think crying is kind of good when somebody dies. It's kind of the, you know, some of the cultural idea that many people have. But then you go to Ajahn with Ajahn Brahm, which is the opposite. Yeah, it's like, yay, you're dying, hooray! Your body is kind of emaciated now, you have cancer, you are finished, you know, this body is not good for you anymore, it's terrible now. Enjoy the dying process. When you go, when you die, you've been a good person, you live your life well. When you die, it's going to be so freeing. You'll be freeing from this terrible body that is no good anymore. Yay! Hooray! Dying is going to be so happy for you. Enjoy the process. This is Ajahn Brahm in the hospital. People sitting around there, people kind of looking at them, they're a little bit dubious. But there is something about someone like Ajahn Brahm. They have a kind of ability to, you know, because of the way they say this, everybody actually kind of gets drawn in by that. And you believe it when you hear that. And it's obviously also quite true, yeah? After body experience and leaving the body behind, obviously it can be very nice if the body is very sick. It's obviously true. And so you feel really good. And then you go on, you move on to your next car, yeah? Now your car is like your wreck. And then you move into your brand new BMW in your next life. And then it's kind of a nice thing, like getting a new body here. So there's a lot of truth in that. And this is what it is. This is kind of what is the good thing about dying, and so dying itself is not bad, it's the rebirth that is the problem. So death is the theme of dying. And be careful with it. Some people find it very hard to think about dying, they get really sad when they die. So remember, that is not the point. The point is to make us live better, that's the purpose of dying reflection. And if you do it in the right way, you basically become a better person. And this is the whole point of it. Remind yourself that when you are with somebody else, it could be the last time you see them. Yeah. If it is the last time you see somebody, how will you treat them if it is the last time? If it is the last time I meet you now, how am I going to treat them? Treat you well. I'm going to be friendly. Because you don't want the last thing we do together to be an argument or something like that. So always think about, this could be my last time that I meet somebody. It's the last time when you leave your house in the morning to go to work. It's maybe the last time you see your husband or wife, you see your kids, Leave in a good way, because this could be it. If you could say goodbye to your colleagues at the end of the day, say this could be the last time. Whenever you are with somebody, remember it could be the last time. Leave in a good way. When you are on your deathbed, is the last thing you can do is definitely have an argument with the people around you. It's not. The last thing you want to do on your deathbed is to argue with people. You just want to be at peace. You want to be relaxed. And then this helps us this way to get things straight. Think about things in the right way. Okay. Are you all happy about that now? That isn't so bad, That is pretty, That's kind of interesting, That's what death is. Especially if you live well, you will die well then. And for the sake of what benefit should a woman or a man, a householder or one born forward, often reflect thus? I must be parted and separated from everyone and everything dear and agreeable to me. Beings have desire and lust in regard to those people and things that are dear and agreeable. And excited by this lust, they engage in misconduct by body, speech, and mind. But when one often reflects upon this theme, the desire and lust in regard to everyone and everything dear and agreeable is either completely abandoned or diminished. It is for the sake of its benefit that a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forward, often reflects thus, and must be partly and separated from everyone and everything dear and agreeable to me. So this is going back to the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, where we must be separated from all things that are pleasing to pleasing. This is what this is all about here. So you must be part of that separate everything here is agreeable to us. Almost everything that we are near and agreeable to us, almost all that stuff belongs to this world. It is stuck in this world, you can't take it with you. There is no future with these things. What is the exception then? First of all, obviously, all your possessions, family and friends, your physical body, belongs to this world. And so much of your identity, who you are as a person, belongs to this world. Why? Because what is your identity? Well, it is about things in this world. You are a Buddhist, you are a family member, you have an education, all these things. All that belongs to this world. What is left? And what is left is your karma. What is left is the mind that you have built up in this life. Don't think about karma so much as, you do things and then you have a positive result in the future life. The positive result of karma is right here, right now. If you live well, feel the good results in this life, that is the kind of karma that is really worthwhile. So build up a good mind inside of yourself. See if your mind is improving, a little bit, year after year, month after month. Are you becoming a little bit more light, a little bit more happy, a little bit less of the negative things? That is what you should look out for. And if you can see that gradual transformation in your personality, you know you're heading in the right direction. That is what it is about. That is what making good karma really is about. See the change in your personality. It's a wonderful thing when you see that. It's so powerful. Wow, I'm becoming a better person. The negative things are falling away. And when you become a better person, it doesn't make you into some kind of really goody pain in the backside. That never happens at all. The better person actually being that opposite. It makes you feel really good about yourself. You become less of a goody-goody pain in the backside. You become more genuinely kind and compassionate. And it's such a wonderful thing when that happens. You see you're changing. You see yourself becoming lighter, more happy, more able to help people around you. You have less vested interest in the outcome because your attachments are going down. You're becoming more independent and free from the world around you. You have more internal resources to be able to make sure that your life is good rather than being dependent on external things all the time. This path gives you almost everything. Everything that's really worthwhile in life can be had through practicing the Buddhist path. And it can't really be had any other way. It can't be had by pursuing worldly ends all the time. So this is what this is about. So that is where we put in the effort. It changes your priority. The change is what matters in your life. The how of how we live becomes more important. The results become far less important. That is what this change of attitude is all about. So separation from all, that is you just remembering that, yeah, again and again and again, all of these things have to go. Initially, maybe you feel a bit sad, but once you get it, it doesn't make you feel sad at all. It makes you pursue the path, pursue those things that matter, live your life better. That is the outcome of it. So it's very powerful little things that work really well. And then the last one, which is a very similar kind of thing again. And for the sake of what benefit should a woman or a man, a householder or one gone forth, often reflects thus, I am the owner of my karma, the heir of my karma. I have karma as my origin, karma as my relative, karma as my resort. I will be the heir of whatever karma, good or bad, that I do. People engage in misconduct by body, speech and mind. When one often reflects upon this theme, such misconduct is either completely abandoned or diminished. It is for the sake of this benefit that a woman or a man, householder one gone forth, should often reflect in this way. I am the owner of my karma. In other words, I am the owner of my intentional actions, is what I mean, yeah? Intentional actions is what I own. I am the heir. I will be the result of my intentional actions. I am creating my own future. That's what that means, yeah? I'm the heir of my karma. My intentional actions create my own future. When is that created? Right now. Right here, right now. That's when you create your future. That's why staying in the present moment is so powerful. Because now you create your future. Depending on your attitude now, you create a good or bad future. I am karma as my source of origin. Karma is what kind of is the origin from which everything else continues. So, karma, I have karma as my relative. Karma is very close to us, it's almost ourselves. So, karma as my resort. Gauchara, it's the kind of way you hang out. It doesn't mean a beach resort, it means the kind of the place where you kind of. When you hang out the gauchara for the cows, it's a pasture, it's a field, yeah, eating. Karma is out of the place where we kind of where we hang out in the future. But I will be the heir of whatever good karma, good or bad karma that I do. So, karma, I think one of the problems with the way karma is often explained in Buddhism, very often it's explained as you do good in this life, you reap the result in future lives. And of course, that is true. There's nothing really wrong with that. But it's hard to really know that. Yeah, okay, you kind of you haven't taken a more as faith. So the more interesting for me way of looking at karma, and I'd like to say this again and again and again, is the karma, the Buddha said there is a nipadama karma, the karma in this very life. Yeah? So when you act in the right way in this life, you get immediate results. You don't have to wait for the future life. And that karma is very tangible. It doesn't mean that you do good and then you kind of, you know, good external things happen to you. That may happen, may or may not happen. But what it really means is that you just feel better about yourself again. And it's very obvious, like I was saying the other day, if you do an act of kindness and you feel good about yourself. You deliberately say something kind to someone else, yeah? You say something good to someone else, intentionally saying something good, and you're annoyed doing the bad thing, and you just feel good afterwards. The other person also feels good, what they call a win-win situation. And this is what, for me, has always been the idea of any really spiritual act, any true Buddhist act, is an act which is good both for yourself and also for other people. So when you say a word really of kindness to someone else, you know, I really appreciate your company. What a wonderful thing it is to have you, Bobby, as the Vice President of the BGF. Thank you for all your hard work, yeah? And when you say these things, and you realize that, and you come from an intention in a positive way, then The other person feels better, you feel better, and then you're building up something very nice. Try not to make it superficial. It's easy to say kind things to others in a superficial way. It is easy to be kind to others because we want to get something back. Yeah, we want. If you, but that's really the wrong way of thinking about it. Try to really mean it from deep inside. I really do appreciate the hard work you're doing. Yeah? I really do appreciate having you as a fellow. How much poorer would our life be if we didn't have all the members of the BGF coming together here? The reason why we can have this kind of, Dhamma class together is precisely because you have an organization like the BGF. If that didn't exist, this wouldn't be possible. So what a wonderful thing it is that this is possible, yeah? What a wonderful thing for me that I have a chance to share some Dhamma reflections of our own. It's good for me too, and it's good for everyone. If you think like this, coming from deep inside in a very positive way, that is where the real karma is made. It's not superficial, it is a deep felt experience where you're really doing things in a different way. If you just think like that, yeah, that's already really good karma already. Because if you think like that, wow, meditation becomes so much easier as a consequence, because you have a very positive view of things. You do the same thing with acts of kindness, yeah? Jerry is very kind, he brings me all this coffee. I'm not sure if the coffee is good for me, Jerry. This coffee may not be so good for cold. But you have done your best. Your attention is very good, and that's a wonderful thing. Yeah? And don't do it just to me, yeah? Do it to Wei Yin as well.
Yes.
Wow, that's really cool. So we do it to each other. It doesn't matter if someone is kind of, a monk or a nun, or if someone is higher in the social hierarchy and you are lower than you, whatever. We do it to everyone. We take every opportunity. And when we do it to everyone, regardless of their religion, their background, whatever, we meet so many people during the day, there's so many opportunities to be kind and to be genuinely kind to other people. So this is how this happens, and then you are building up the karma, you're building up happiness in the here and now. This is the happiness that is far more important. And then you can also start to understand why it is karma must work across lifetimes. Because if you build up a beautiful mind, as I was saying before, I was going through dependent origination, yeah? You build up that beautiful consciousness. When you die, that's where it will continue. And that's how you end up getting good results in the future life. But too many people, it's like, yeah, good karma, I would like this new BMW is really cool, I'd like one of those. I'm going to make some good karma, because it's somebody's like getting the future life. But it's so superficial, yeah, it's so incredibly superficial. I'm not going to make it happy anyway, it's going to make it give you a little bit of happiness, okay. BMWs are pretty cool cars, I agree, but it's going to give you a tiny bit of happiness, and that's it. I remember recently I was driving back, I was giving a talk at a house in Perth, and on the way back, there was this doctor, and he had this brand new, really fancy BMW. I started coming in the spaceship when we get inside, yeah? And actually, I must admit, it was quite cool. But by the time I was back to the monastery already, I was kind of bored with it, yeah? That was it. And then we need something else, we can move on to something else. So, get into the deeper aspects of things. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with having a nice BMW. I'm not trying to kind of put it down either. It's okay. But that is not really what life is about. That is not where we get anything true happiness, anything really, really worthwhile in the long run. So just in case someone here has a BMW, I've got to be careful what I say here. This is what happened to me in Indonesia. I just been in Indonesia just recently. I went to a place called Makassar. You know what Makassar is? Sulawesi, one of the big cities on Sulawesi is called Makassar. And I gave this talk, and I was talking about BMWs. Yeah, and I was saying, yeah, forget about the BMWs. And the next day, they drive me back to the airport in a BMW. This owner, yeah, this quite a wealthy businessman. He was always quite proud of his car. And I had to kind of try to find the kind of suitable thing to say at that point. So it's always painful, yeah, but I think he understood the point. He was actually very grateful for everything. I think he had understood the point. I don't think he was a problem. Yeah. But this is what the pitfalls are being among sometimes. So that's his karma. So let's have a quick look at the rest of this sutta. It is not so important. We have gone through the most important things. Let's have a look at the last part as well. This noble disciple reflects thus. I am not the only one who is subject to old age and not exempt from old age. All beings that come and go and pass away and undergo rebirth are subject to old age. None are exempt from old age. So here you make it into a universal truth. There is no corner of samsara where you get away from old age. There is no corner of samsara where you get away from sickness and death, or separation from what is pleasing and dear to you. It is everywhere, and regardless of where you go, it's there. It's a universal truth. It doesn't matter if you get reborn somewhere else or a different person, still you're going to have the same problem. As the author reflects on this theme, the path is generated. Yeah, what does that mean? The path, it means you become a stream actor, that's what it means. Yeah, it means you actually see the truth of Buddhism. Isn't that kind of astonishing? Usually we are told, yeah, actually what you have to do, you have to sit down and meditate really hard, and you have to get lots of insight, and you pass on all these kind of things. And here, the Buddha says, all you have to do, really, of course, it's not all, because it's actually quite profound, but really all you have to do is to reflect on all things. And as you do that, if you do it in the right way, the path is generated. That's how powerful some of the simple things can be. Yeah, of course, it also implies samadhi, it also implies sati, it implies the other factors of the noble eightfold path as well. But it shows you how powerful these simple things can be. Why? And the reason is because what you're doing here is that you're really contemplating impermanence, you're contemplating suffering, and that can give rise to this profound insight if the supporting factors of samadhi and meditation are there. It's interesting, isn't it? It's a different way of looking at the Buddhist path in a sense. So. Then, of course, once you are a stream actor, you pursue that path, you develop and cultivate it. And as you do so, the sectors are entirely abandoned. The underlying tendencies are uprooted. In other words, you become an arahant. Isn't this kind of great? Based on the reflection of all day, this shows you how powerful these reflections are. This is not just for beginners, this is really profound thing. And you have the same thing for illness. You have the same thing for death. Yeah. The noble disciple reflects thus, I am not the only one who is subject to death. Not exempt from death. All beings that come and go, that pass away and undergo rebirth, are subject to death. None are exempt from death. And the author reflects on this theme, the path again is generated. He pursues this path, develops it, and cultivates it. And he does so, the fetters are entirely abandoned, and the underlying tendencies are uprooted. Contemplate death, one of the most important contemplations in the suttas. If you do it in the right way, you become a stream entry. And then you continue practicing that path once you know what it is. Once you have seen the Dhamma, the path is in your heart, you know exactly what you have to do, and you continue that until you become an arahant, fully awakened. The noble disciple reflects thus, I am not the only one who must be parted and separated from everyone and everything dear and agreeable. This is a universal truth. It is true for everyone. You can't escape that. As you reflect in this way, you become a stream entry. And as you keep on practicing, you end up becoming an arahant. And the last one is the same thing for the reflecting on karma, and exactly the same thing. Beautiful, isn't it? It's nice and powerful. This thing that we think, because sometimes we think the simple things of Buddhism are so basic. We think it is not really the deep aspects of the Buddha, the Dhamma, but actually these things are very profound once you understand them in the right way. Important to remember this, because sometimes we become a bit intimidated by Buddhism, because Buddhism seems so incredibly profound. You know, you hear a Dhamma talk and it just seems so out of reach for many of us. When you hear some of these Dhamma talks about the five aggregates and you reflect on the impermanence of the five aggregates, what does it mean to reflect on the impermanence of the five? I will teach today what it means, because that too, actually, is far more obvious than you may think. But sometimes it is so hard to grasp, but even when you're in the suttas, it may be difficult to get this, although this one is a bit different. So sometimes we need to bring Buddhism back to earth again, back to reality. Yeah. And this is what this does. The simple things in life, that is what we should focus on. The basic things. Forget about so much of the highfalutin stuff. I'm not saying it is necessarily wrong, but it's sometimes very difficult to relate to, very difficult to know how to apply it in our ordinary lives. Get back to the basics. The basics is what is going to sustain you. The basic is what is going to allow all of these other things to happen. If you get the basics right, the rest of the path will just flourish, will blossom, and all these things come, come as a matter of course. That is how Buddhism really works. This is what the Buddha is saying here. It's not even that basic, yeah? It takes you all the way to stream entry, if you practice this in the right way. Yeah? All you have to do is to be kind. What does the Buddha say is the supporting conditions for Satipatthana? Satipatthana is just your ability to watch the breath, really, and then to go into samadhi. Supporting condition is really only, well, it's two. One is sila, to be kinder. The other one is to have buddhukaditti, a straight view, which means that you have a certain idea of how the world works, think about rebirth, that sort of stuff. And that's really all. And then from there comes everything else. And then you get these kind of insights. So keep it simple. And this is a good example of how simplicity actually can take you a long, long way. Please, yeah. Please ask questions.
It's related to one of the themes, separation from dear ones.
Yeah.
Okay. My example is I'm still taking a long time to come to terms to find closure with the passing of my mom.
Okay.
Okay. Mom has passed away 2014, at least 3.5 years already.
Yeah.
She was an Alzheimer's patient for 20 years.
Okay.
I was the single sole caregiver.
Yeah.
As I age now,
yeah.
I can see OH in my mom when I was taking care of her.
Yeah.
The illness eating up her faculties,
yeah,
her personality. We are very close family. Yeah. So even at this point in time, I also contemplate on my own death in this lifetime.
Okay,
yeah. I have a lot of fear. I still haven't really come to terms about my mom's that passing away even.
Are you afraid you're going to get Alzheimer's as well?
Because the doctors tell us that there is a genetic factor, and the way I'm handling my life now also is like, oh, with all the stress and all the worries, the mind being very unclear, or I don't know what I'm intoxicated with.
Okay. Well, this is quite natural, you know, when you see your own mother in that kind of situation, and then you think, well, I have to end up in the same way, it is kind of unpleasant. My grandmother, she also had Alzheimer's in there. For many years, and my mother, she was very worried about this because she was also going to go the same way. Yeah, she was very kind of very uncomfortable with that. So I know from personal experience exactly what we're talking about. And the answer really is that instead of being afraid, the point is to give this should be a reminder to you of the dangers of old age. This is what happens. Yeah. So instead of being fear. A little bit of fear is natural. Turn that fear into action rather than just allowing it to be fear. This could happen. Okay, so let's say there's absolutely no guarantee you will get Alzheimer's just because your mother had it. Yeah, so these are very uncertain. But there is a possibility we may all get Alzheimer's. Yeah, I guess the monks get Alzheimer's. Have you been in the monks with Alzheimer's? Yeah, okay, the monks get Alzheimer's as well. Yeah, it happens everywhere. Yeah? So because of this, you just remind yourself, now is the opportunity, now I have a chance. It reminds you of the urgency of all of this, because before you know it, it is too late. This is always the problem, yeah? When you are very young, then of course it is very easy to forget it, because it looks like the future is ahead of you for a lot of time. Yeah, but maybe you haven't got that much time. The older you get, you start to realize, actually there's a truth that time is actually quite short. And especially when you see this thing, but this is what you should remind yourself of. Now is the opportunity. Now I have a chance. And it becomes a moment-to-moment thing. Yeah? Every moment in your life matters. There is no timely ever to do the wrong thing. Because every time you do the wrong thing, you're heading one step back on the path. You haven't got time for that. Even if you are young. Yeah. Even when you are young, there's no time for actually doing the wrong thing. It takes you one step back, and there is no opportunity. Once you see the outside, you see the death, you see all these things, it becomes so much more clear to you, and actually there is no time to waste. So in your daily life, yes, it is true that you become unclear. It is natural that you become unclear in your daily life. There's an interesting sutta where Mahanama comes to the Buddha. Mahanama was the Buddha's cousin. And he says to the Buddha, when I kind of go into the city, Kapilavastu, there's all these things happening, there's chariots and elephants and trumpets, so much stuff going on that I completely lose my mindfulness, and I don't know what's going on. So what should I do? Mahanama is a stream enter, he's an Aryan, He loses his ability, so when things get too kind of confusing and too many things happening. And the Buddha says to him, don't be concerned, Mahanama, because of your insight into the teachings, you will have a good death regardless. So don't worry too much if you get confused sometimes. It's unavoidable in life, that's what so many things happen there. Just know that we get confused. When you come back home later on, when you have a bit of time again, bring yourself back to reality. Listen to a Dhamma talk. Listen to those things that remind you of what really matters in life. This is what you need to do. This is why I always stress to people, if you're going to have success in the teaching of Buddha, the most important thing is all to be able to persevere, to be able to commit moment to moment. This is what really matters. The only way you're going to do that is to allow yourself to listen to Dhamma talks regularly. Come back to what is important in life. Remind yourself of what really matters. And if you keep on doing that, then that will enable that perseverance on the path. The foundation of everything else is the Kalyanamitta. It is the word of the Buddha. That is the source from which everything else happens. Once you get that into place, and you have to do it again and again and again, things tend to blossom from there, tend to happen from there. So take it in the right way. Okay, if you have a little bit of fear, it's alright, Because it's natural that we should have a little bit of fear when we see this thing. But remember, what it really is a call to action. Now is a chance, now is an opportunity. That is what it really is all about. And then, if you do get Alzheimer's, well, you can't do much about that. That's just life. But at least you have prepared yourself to the maximum. And that is basically what you have to do then. Anyway, I think that if you do prepare yourself to the maximum by living well, I think the chances of Alzheimer's actually go down. I think they become less. That's what I reckon. I don't know if that's true, that's what I reckon. I just think positive smart on that. Are you happy with that then? Okay, good.
The teaching in Dhamma is about knowing the
existence
for the next people, and they leave a lot of confusion and fear in the people. Because they are mainly into the last thought. And the last thought, how to control it. That also I think is quite confused for people.
Thank you for bringing that up. It's a very good point. These things are very closely related to each other. The rejection of the intermediate stage and making the last thought moment important are actually very closely related to each other. Because if there is no intermediate stage, obviously you've asked for the infinite matter, because that is directly connected to your rebirth. But if there is an intermediate stage, it changes the equation completely. Why? And the reason is because the whole point of this intermediate existence is that it gives you a chance to have a life review. It gives you a chance to kind of look at your life overall, and then to evaluate whether you have lived well or not. And then that overall evaluation will then be what determines where you get reborn, rather than the life fulfillment. So I say to people, don't worry so much about the last thought moment. Actually, I don't think it matters that much at all. It may matter a tiny little bit, but in the end, what really matters is the karma that you have built up during a lifetime. That is what matters. That is what is going to carry you on for the long term into the future. Next life, but also future lives. The last thought moment is only going to be one little bit of karma at the very end. And really, it is is it completely irrelevant? It is 99% irrelevant. the Buddha doesn't say anything about this in the suttas. This is all kind of blamed aside from the commentaries and everywhere else. If it was really important, the Buddha would probably have said something in the suttas. So the fact that the Buddha doesn't say anything speaks volumes for how insignificant it is. So don't worry about it. But still, when you go and see somebody in hospital, then still help them to kind of mature some of their good karmas by helping them have a good death. Yeah. So when you go there, what is nice to do when you go to see somebody in hospital? What is really good is to remind them of some of the good things in their life. Yeah. Remind them of, especially things that you remember from their life. Thank them for the good thing that they have done for you. Yeah. I remember you did this for me. Wow, it was so wonderful. And you may have never said this before because we often don't say these things to each other. But take the opportunity when someone is dying. Wow, I feel so grateful. You know, you did this for me such a long time ago. And you bring up these positive things. And then you can see they get a smile on the face, yeah, because they feel happy about that. And then you are helping them. It's nice to have a pleasant day anyway, even if the last one of it isn't so important. It's nice to be able to relax when you're dying, so you don't have to struggle so hard, all these kind of things. And then they get breathing more easily, and then when they die, the whole thing happens. You don't hold on so hard, the whole process happens much more naturally. Yeah. So we have this opportunity to give a gift to people when they're dying. It's also good for us, yeah, when we do that for other people, and it's good for everyone involved. So when you go to hospital, try to kind of look at things in that way, and you are adding something to people's passing away while I'm subtracting something. As a Rama tells the story, you probably heard the story of this nun who was lying in hospital, yeah, and he had a sign on the door, no visitors. You know the story? No visitors. It was a very small paper box, except Adam Ram, yeah? And the reason was, she told her, because all the people that come in, all they do is just upset and negative, not negative, but upset and kind of crying and saying, no, we don't want you to die. Well, I'm dying, you know, I can't do anything about that. And as a Ram goes in, he tells us the joke, what is that latest joke, the latest dying joke is, what did the Buddhist coroner, you know the coroner is it? Yeah? The person kind of looks at the corpse, that kind of stuff. Why did the Buddhist coroner get fired from his job? Because on the death certificate, a cause of death, he put birth. really too much dependent origination, yeah? This is the kind of joke that Adam Ram goes when people die. I think he told this recently at a funeral service, I think, yeah. So when Adam Ram does a funeral service, he often tells a joke for two, yeah. And if you are a long-term disciple of Adam Ram, it's no problem. You just laugh, you have a good time. And then the spirit up there, kind of looking down, the spirit also laughs. Yeah, spirit also happy, yeah. This is how you do these things. So. Yes.
I was just interested to just expand further. I think you put on what Mr. Bing just said about death contemplation.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying about it, but one of the things I find is that when you contemplate death and when you have this understanding that everything, when you have some understanding that everything is real, going to go away, and etc. That can actually sometimes fill you with a sense of despair, because with that understanding, you come to a different level now of understanding that none of this matters. And in a sense, that can sometimes destroy your aspirations or certain things. And to the mind, like my mind, for example, was for someone who is. May not understand that very well. I'm interested in your thoughts on how you move forward from that sense of despair or a sense of loss, even or panic sometimes, and you feel sometimes with the understanding that all this is
okay. Yeah, okay, no, thank you for that. I think that's a good point, and I think this is one of the things about the Dhamma. The Dhamma sometimes can be, because it is a very different way of looking at the world from what we're used to, it can be so challenging, and that's what you're really saying, that you feel a sense of despair because it challenges you, all of us probably, on a deep level. So take it gradually, and give yourself time to reflect on these things. If you feel despairing about it, don't just take it aboard as an axiom of mind, but this is the absolute truth. Hold off a little bit and allow it to percolate slowly into you. So we have a gradual process of understanding. But I think it's probably obvious to you already that some of this is obviously true. Yeah, I mean, it's obvious that some of these things must be true. It's not kind of fantasy like we're talking about here. We're talking about things that we can all relate to some level. But one of the main things here is that it doesn't mean that you change your life dramatically. What it means is just that the way you approach life changes. So you can still have the same aspirations, yes? Maybe your aspiration is, I don't know, what to establish a business or whatever, I don't know what it is. You can still have an aspiration, but you start to shift a little bit and to understand that how I establish the business is just as important as whether the business is successful or not. Yeah, so okay, you keep on establishing the business. There is, of course, a certain happiness in having success in business. Yeah, let's face it. There is some happiness with that. You feel like you've done something useful, something valuable in life, and you have kind of built something up, and you're giving a future to your kids, whatever it is, and your children. Not children, okay. You give, whatever it is, you get the rough idea. I'm not denying that there is happiness in these things, but you understand the limitations of our happiness, and they have very severe limitations to it. So you just gradually change your approach a little bit. That's all you're doing. So don't go too fast. If you try to go further than what you're ready for, that is when that despair becomes really bad and has a very bad effect on your life. Just gradually allow these ideas to develop in your mind and see how it affects your life. And the most important thing is, how it actually makes the whole process happen. If you have an aspiration, remember, the process is more important than the result. And this is really one of those critical things. And that is something that takes time to get. You go back and you start to think, well, what these are my aspirations? How can I make that process better? So you start improving on the process. It takes time to really get the hang of that. How exactly do I do that in practice? Yeah. But gradually over time, this kind of comes about and it starts to happen and you start to see how it is done. So don't fall into despair. Look at some of the people who've been practicing the path for a long time. They're not desperate people. Adam Grant's not very desperate. He's the exact opposite. And that is precisely because they're taking these teachings on board in a very deep sense. They actually really transform you and make you into a far better person at the end of the day. A more happy person, a more balanced person. So they have that effect. But in the meantime, you have to kind of make that transition smoothly. Don't go too fast. Sometimes people go too far. They throw, check everything out. Yeah, now I'm going to be perfect from now on. It doesn't work. You have to kind of gradual approach to it. I think that is probably the best way of doing it. But that you are despairing a little bit, maybe a good sign, because maybe it means that you're having some insight. So maybe a little bit of despair is a good thing. And maybe you get your balance back again later on. And you carry on with this one. Okay, we have another 15 minutes to go, if you wish. Is that right for me? I just want to read out one of my little favorite passages from the next sutta of page 15 then, the Potalya Sutta. And because it just adds a little bit to what we have been, more of the same really, but it adds a little bit to what we have been talking about. This is a famous sutta, or famous for me anyway. It's famous for one person, but not famous, I'm sure that's famous. And the Potalya Sutta, this is one of those seven similes you find in there. The Buddha says to Potalya, householder, suppose a man or a woman borrowed goods on loan, a fancy carriage, fine jewel earrings, and preceded and surrounded by those borrowed goods, he or she went to the marketplace. Then people, seeing him or her, would say, "Sirs, that is a rich man or a rich woman. That is how the rich enjoy their wealth." Then the owners, whenever they saw him, would take back their things. What do you think, householder? Would that be enough for that man to become dejected? So here you have someone who has borrowed all this stuff, yeah? And then you kind of think yourself very important. You know, some of the, if you're wealthy, people think they're very important when they're wealthy. It's completely rubbish, isn't it? Just because you're wealthy doesn't make you important. But anyway, that's what people think. So you're very wealthy and you think you're very important and you kind of get attached to that wealth. That's the problem here, yeah? So you have all this borrowed goods, you get attached to it. That's what is going on with this man. Especially because other people say, wow, other people get envious, yeah? Other people think, yeah, I wish I had that kind of money, yeah? Look at this man, wow, this is really amazing to see people so wealthy like this. And because of that, you're attached to it, because other people kind of praise you in a shallow way and all these kind of things. And then, when the borrowed goods get taken back, you think, oh no, yeah, you're attached, and then you feel naked, you feel kind of let down when all of those things are gone. And then the Buddha said, and then he replied, yes, venerable sir, why is that? Because the owners took back their things. So do householder, a noble disciple considers thus, sensual things, the sensual objects of the world, having been compared to borrowed goods by the lesser ones, they provide much suffering and much despair. All the dangers in them is great. What are these sensual goods? What are these sensual pleasures that we are talking about? These are all the things we attach to in life. Yeah, everything we attach to in life, everything we own, all the friendships, the people around us, our physical body, even our some of our mental content and attachments. That is what is meant by this. They're all borrowed goods. So borrowed, why is it borrowed? We think we own things. Yeah, this is mine. You can't take that. This is my stuff. But don't take my stuff. It belongs to me. But how much can we control these things? And there's a limit to how much control we have even over the things we think we own. Why? Because one day the thief comes by, he sees Bobby's bags, and then he thinks Bobby's bag is full of interesting stuff, and he grabs your bag, and then you look down, oops, my bag is gone. Yeah. This happens all the time, right? And of course, it happens during life, but it certainly happens when we're going to die. Everything has to go when we die. Death never is that far away. And because of this, everything in life is borrowed. You have it for a short period of time, then it's gone. And who is it that comes and cleanses it back? It's nature. Nature is impermanent. Nature says, okay, now you're not going to have it anymore because you're dying. Nature claims back all of these things, and that is why all of these things are borrowed. Yeah, and I always like you to compare it to, let's say, borrow something in this life. Let's say that you are renting an apartment somewhere. This is a nice way of looking at it. And you're renting an apartment, say, only for a short term, yeah, like 3 months or whatever. Now, if you are renting an apartment for a short term, instead of owning an apartment, if you own an apartment, you're going to put a lot of effort and money into make it really nice, yeah? Make it a perfect home that feels really good, has the right furniture, the right paint on the walls. Why? Because you are the owner. Yeah? You're not the owner. I just said you're not the owner. So but it feels like you're the owner, so you put all these things into it. But if you rent the apartment, only have it for 3 months. How much are you going to put into it if you're only going to have it for 3 months? Not all that much, yeah? Because who is going to be the beneficiary? Well, the owner is going to be the beneficiary, even though he doesn't know, he doesn't really own it. He thinks he owns it. So he's going to be the beneficiary. You're not going to put in heaps of your own money into an apartment that you are borrowing or renting for a few months. But our house, everything we own, are just like that apartment. Yeah, everything is like that. How much are you going to invest in all of these worldly things that we have for a short time, that are going to come to an end, often before our life ends, at the very least, when our life comes to an end, it's all going to have to go. How much are you going to invest in that? It's all going to have to go. Who is going to be the beneficiary? Actually, it's all going to have to go. Children are going to be the beneficiary, or the state is going to be the beneficiary if you have any kids, yeah? You really want to leave all that stuff to the state? Probably not. And even the feeling that your children are going to be the beneficiary is kind of nice. It's got nothing to do with you anymore because you are moving on into the future. You have to give it all up, including your children. And they also don't have to go when you die. You don't remember your kids from the past life. Yeah, that's irrelevant. In the future life, your kids in this life are going to be completely irrelevant. This is the way it goes. So we start to change our investment strategy. This is what this is all about. Why invest everything into this life when the reality, this life is only a tiny slice of time. The reality of time is so much faster. If you're going to get reborn over here, keep on going on and on and on. Your investment horizon changes. You start to invest for the long term rather than for the short term. This is such an important change in attitude. This is why the idea of rebirth is so important, because your entire attitude to life becomes different. So instead of thinking about this life, everything I do about this life is important. You know, I'm going to do everything to make everything happen in this life. And even if I have to cut the few quarters shorter and I have to do some bad things and live immorally, it doesn't matter because this life is so important. If you do that, you are investing for the short term and you are. In the long run, you are actually doing the opposite of investing. You are doing negative investment that's going to reap negative results in the future, if you think like that. Instead, you think for the long term. And you think that what really matters is what I can take with me into the future. What is that? It is the mind I create in this life. Create a good mind in this life, a gentle mind, a kind mind, a soft heart, with loving kindness and compassion, with understanding and comprehension. That is what you bring into the future. Then you are investing in the long run rather than investing in one life. And again, it doesn't mean that you have to change your life all that much. Yeah? It is more your attitude to life that you change. You can still do the same job. You can still have the same relationships. You can still live in roughly the same way. It's just that you live that life with a different attitude, with more kindness, with all these kind of things. That is really the main change. And you don't think anymore that cutting corners, that living immorally, living unethically, is actually going to get you anywhere. Because what you're doing is that you are disinvesting for the long run and you're destroying your long-term happiness just so you can have a little bit of happiness in this life. It's a bit like saying, okay, I'm going to go down to the shop down the bottom, they have some nice food down there, and because the only thing I care about is happiness right now, I'm going to steal that food, and then I'm very happy to go to jail afterwards. Yeah? It's crazy, yeah? Nobody thinks like that. No, you don't do that kind of stuff because it's madness. But that is how we actually live our lives. Sometimes we live our lives as if I'm going to come and just enjoy now, and then I will go to jail in the future. That's a little bit how we live our lives. So very powerful simile. And once you get this, you start to kind of look at life in an entirely different way and look at things and start to look at the process is more important than the actual results. Yes, please. Everyone must ask at least one question.
I have so many contradictions.
Yeah.
First we talk about future now.
Yeah.
And then now we are talking about working on our future life.
Yeah.
And it is only a part of right now.
Yeah.
We have to grow and invest.
Our relationship. Oh, you don't be separated.
Yeah.
So, why should we bother? Who cares? You can go to hell.
Yeah.
Your children are not yours. So, I mean, as you speak, I have so many contradictions.
Okay, yeah. Good, yeah, great. Okay, thank you for asking. It's very good to bring these things up. The first contradiction is the contradiction about, well, I'm talking about the future, but also about happiness in this life. What should we think? What should we think about happiness in the future, or happiness in this life? What should we do? And actually, there's no contradiction there. Because if you live well now, it will make you happy now, and it will also create happiness in the future. That is the magic about this. Remember that the point here is that if you are going to have a happy future life, you have to lift your mind up to this life. That mind that you are lifting up to this life is a happy mind right here, right now. And then when you continue in the future, you actually also is happy in the future. It's a win-win situation. Yeah? If you are kind now, you feel good about yourself now, and you are happy now, and that also affects how you have what your life is in the future. If you are unkind now, if you think, yeah, I've got to get my business going, this is the most important thing, yeah, because my goal is a business which works out, so I'm going to have to a few people on the web and have to cheat them a little bit, but never mind. The goal of the business is more important, yeah? In that way, when you cheat somebody else, you're not going to feel good about yourself afterwards. Maybe you have success in the business, but maybe you don't. Maybe you don't even have success in the business, yeah? Then you have double failure. You have destroyed your happiness in the present as well as not getting the business right. But even if your business turned out to be right, it's going to be a very shallow kind of happiness because deep down, you know you have got it in the wrong way and you feel bad about yourself. And then, when you then go on to your next life, it's going to affect your next life as well, because you haven't lived well in this life. Yeah? This is the difference between focusing on the goal, rather than focusing on how you reach the goal. And when you focus in the right way, then you are actually creating goodness both here and also in the future at the same time. So there isn't any contradiction there. It is just an appearance, basically, you just need to sort out the various concepts in your mind, and when it fits together, then you see the whole picture and understand how it all works out. As for your children, there is ultimate separation, that is true, but it doesn't mean that we don't care for our children. Yeah? If that was the case, Buddhism would be a terrible religion to say, okay, forget about your kids, just put them out on the street and allow them to look after themselves, because there is no future anyway, we're all going to be separated. No, that is not what it means at all. In fact, remember that kindness is the most important thing, and you have a responsibility towards your kids. If you treat your kids well, first of all, you have compassion towards them. You want to help other people in the world. The people you have the most responsibility to help are your own children. Make sure you look after them. Give them the best possible position in life to prosper, to be happy, all of these kind of things. While you do that, you're also making yourself happy again, because you know you're treating other people in the right way. Your children are also other people, yeah? They too matter in this particular context. But you remember at the same time, and this is kind of the thing, you also remember that I will eventually be separated from them. Yeah. We know that is true. This happened with our own grandparents and parents before us. It's just unavoidable. This is life. So we try on one hand to act in the right way, but also to be realistic about life. If we say, don't want to see, because it's too painful to know about these things, then what you're doing is that you're just building up this kind of massive surprise when it eventually happens, and then you break down completely when you have to die, or you make your children die before you. This is possible, yeah, this happens sometimes. It's very, very painful for parents when that happens. I have a sister who's got cancer, and she's not dying yet, but probably getting maybe quite close. And my father, for him, it's very difficult to take, yeah, because when you see your child dying before, it's not easy. The point is that when you do that, when you remember that the separation is going to happen, that it eventually will come, it means that the way you deal with that relationship is also different. First of all, we know that it is impermanent. It actually means that every moment matters more. Now I have the chance to be kind. Now I have the chance to do the right thing for my child. But when I eventually die, I can die at peace, knowing that I've done all the right things. This is the right thing to think about this. Yeah? If you think that the relationship is really always going to be there, even though you know deep down it isn't true, very often we forget to be kind in the present moment. We get angry when we know we shouldn't really be getting angry. We get upset about small things in life. Yeah? You didn't put away the socks in the right way. Okay? Who cares if you didn't put away the socks in the right way? And this is what happens. So it reminds us of the big picture. Now is my chance to do the right thing. Let me do it now. And then, when eventually the time comes to be separated, we can do it more peacefully, knowing we have lived to the best possible way, and then we can go on our separate ways in the future. Yeah. What also happens is that you get a little bit less attachment to your children when you think like this. So it's a good thing. It's a positive thing. Sometimes people think not having attachment to our kids is bad. Some attachment is necessary. Some attachment would always be there. You're never going to be fully unattached anyway, so don't forget about that. But some attachment would always be there. But if we can reduce the attachment a little bit, it means that there is less craving and desire related to our kids. If we have a lot of attachment, what it means that if your child has badly, you feel really bad about it. Because you have a vested interest in how that child behaves. If they behave badly in front of others, you feel that you have been offended as well, because the child is reflecting on you, yeah? It feels like you haven't brought the child up properly or something, whatever it is. Or if the child does badly at school, maybe you feel again it reflects badly on you, because the child looks stupid compared to all the other children. But if you don't have so much attachment, then it means that when your child is behaving badly, yeah, instead of getting upset with that, you think you're more cool, you have more clarity, you think, how can I actually help my child to act more appropriately in the future? Instead of getting anger often backfires. Anger often makes the child more resistant, doesn't want to listen to you. And if you can approach the child with loving kindness and explain to the child, this is actually for your own future benefit that you behave in the right way. It's for your own future benefit that you do reasonably well at school. So I don't expect you to get all A's, at least not get all the F's. Yeah? Find the middle way. And then it's up to you how you want to live your life. But you become more cool. When you become more cool, your approach is a bit more rational, a bit more even. Yeah? So a little bit less attachment is always good. The best parents that I see are the ones that they don't really expect too much of the children. All they do is give them love, give them support, give them emotional support, and all the other things tend to come from that. So reflect on these things, yeah? Please don't kind of think, was it really easy because when I say these things. Reflect on them and see if you can use these ideas for growth in your own personal life. And I can almost guarantee that we can, if we persevere and we keep on reflecting on this in the right way. Things, very, very good things will come out of it. Okay, so that is it for the morning. Yeah. Okay, very good. So we'll see you again after the meal at around 2 o'clock. Quarter to two, sorry. Yeah,